Please do have that passage open in front of you that we've just read, Matthew chapter 7 and verses 13 and 14. And the sheets, as usual, are around for people roughly in, say, school years 8 to 10 or 11. Some at the back there, I think. If you'd like to use one of those, then please get hold of one. So, imagine the scene. You are there in the office where you work, sitting at your computer. The morning, the usual mixture of real work, chat at the coffee machine, and just the occasional glance at Facebook. It's a perfectly ordinary day, and then suddenly someone says, "Do you smell that? Does that smell like smoke?" You take no notice. In fact, you hardly hear the words. You're absorbed in what you're doing. Then a few minutes later, someone on the other side of you says, "That definitely smells like smoke. I'm going to have a look." But you found an interesting website and you're just not listening. The smell grows stronger, but you choose to ignore it. There is a faint crackling sound in the distance, but you ignore that as well. And then the fire alarm sounds. It's ear-splitting, just like the one you will hear after the service today. Still, you sit at your desk, peering at your screen and wishing this infuriating noise would stop. Now, coils of smoke are clearly visible, drifting in through the door over there. You're not interested, but you can't help starting to cough. Above your head, the lights flicker and die. But then the computer screen goes dark. As you look around, you can see the fire breaking in from the corridor. And you can see that there is one doorway in the far corner of the room that is still clear. There is still one way of escape. What do you do? You have two options. You either stay and face the smoke and flames, or you run for the doorway and escape. In the Bible passage we're looking at this morning, Jesus confronts us with a choice just as stark as that one. After all the teaching he has given, after all that he's explained to his listeners, it is now decision time. We've reached the point in the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus has completed the main body of his teaching. He's really said what he wants to say. As we saw last week, the heart of the Sermon on the Mount is bracketed between chapter 5, verse 17, and chapter 7, verse 12, the two places where Jesus mentions the law and the prophets. And last week we finished working through that long central section, and we finished with the so-called golden rule in chapter 7, verse 12. "So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets." That's it. After that, there's a big full stop, a big pause, and Jesus turns to his followers, and he turns to the great crowds who are thronging the hillside around them, and he says, "This is it. Now, what are you going to do about it? Here's the message. I've told you about the kingdom. I've told you about what my followers' lives are going to look like. I've shown you what it means to have a live and genuine relationship with God, to know him as your Father. Now, will you take it or will you leave it? Are you going to be part of my kingdom, have me as your king, and live like this, or are you going to reject me and stay outside?" And the rest of the Sermon on the Mount, the second half of Matthew 7, is really a repeated challenge to respond to the call of the kingdom. This is very uncompromising stuff that we will be looking at. And none of it is blunter than today's message, decision time. You see, the worst thing we could do is to read or hear the Sermon on the Mount and think, "That's great, I like the sound of that. You know what, I think I'll have a go at that." Today's passage, these two short verses, make it absolutely clear that will not do. Today, Jesus is calling you to respond. When the fire alarm goes and you smell the smoke, you do not focus on tidying your desk or checking your emails or even debating the evacuation plan. You make for the escape route, unless you prefer to stay put and face the consequences. How does Jesus close the Sermon on the Mount? Not with some vague philosophical observations. Not with some intellectual theory that we can calmly evaluate and pass our own judgments. Not even by urging us to try a bit harder, but with this inescapable summons. So we're looking at the challenge Jesus gives us, and we'll break it into four simple statements. Here's the first one. There are only two options. There are only two options. Let's read verses 13 and 14 again. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Here's the really shocking thing. According to Jesus, there are only two options. There are only two pathways through life. Does that come as a shock? A lot of people would say differently. A lot of people would say, thanks very much, but I'm on my own journey through life, and I'm sure everyone else is on theirs. The possibilities are endless. Don't you tell me there are only two options. But that's not what Jesus says. Whether he speaks in these verses of gates, of ways, or of destinations, there are two, and two only. Just as in a burning building, there are two options and no middle ground between them. According to Jesus, all the world's philosophies and religions, every belief system you come across, whether it's thousands of years old or whether it was dreamed up yesterday, all boil down to two simple options. Do you follow Jesus Christ? Do you submit to him as Lord and King? Or do you reject him? Now, you may not like that message. You may not want to hear that there are only two options, but you can't deny that it is what Jesus says. Two options only. Here's the second statement. There are only two destinations. There are only two destinations. Now, some of us have been up Snowdon in North Wales. Some of you may even have been up there recently. I think you have. Now, many people think that the spiritual journey we make through life is rather like climbing Snowdon. It's a wonderful mountain, and there are many ways to reach the top. There are so many paths to choose from. There's the Watkin path, there's the Llanberis path, there's the Pig track, there's the Miners track, there's Crib Goch, there's the Snowdon Ranger path, or if you prefer, you can even go up on the train. Some of these routes are harder, and some of them are easier. Some steeper, some gentler, some longer, some shorter, and the views on the way up are different. But in the end, they all lead to the same place. They all end up at the top of the mountain, the summit of Snowdon. And that's what life is like, people think. We all climb the mountain in our own way, at our own pace, starting from different places. But in the end, we all arrive at the top of the mountain. But Jesus says it's not like that at all. In fact, the starting point is the same for all of us. It's the destination that is starkly different. There are two destinations. One of those options leads to destruction, while the other leads to life. And that's a message that rings throughout the Bible. From beginning to end. Long ago, Moses put it this way when he was speaking to the Israelites just before they entered the promised land. This is Deuteronomy 30, verse 15. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. And verse 19, this day I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life, so that you and your children may live. Moses too speaks of two destinations and calls on the people to choose life. And 1500 years later, Jesus comes as God's full and final revelation. He presents himself as the crucial point in the choice that must be made, and he points to the same two destinations. Jesus speaks first of destruction. A single word with a huge and deadly weight of meaning. Jesus is talking about hell. Take one of these two options, he says, and you will end up in hell. It's absolutely essential that we hear and understand these words. This is the Jesus who lived this wonderful, loving, perfect life on earth. This is the Jesus who heals the sick and raises the dead. This is the Jesus who presents us with all this amazing teaching. This is the Jesus who takes the children in his arms. This Jesus also speaks about hell. Not once, but many times, in order to warn people of where they will go, our final destination, if we insist on rejecting him. We are rebels against God, we are sinners, and according to God's justice, hell is precisely what we all deserve. And this is one destination. The Bible pictures hell in a number of ways, but most often as a fire, a lake of fire that never goes out. Revelation 20, verse 10 presents this very clearly. Revelation 20, verse 15. If anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. If you are not listed in the book of life, this is your final destination. And yes, the image of fire is just that. It is an image, it's a picture, but the reality will not be easier to bear. It will certainly be worse than the picture. And this is not comfortable to think about. It may not be a message you want to hear this morning. It may be something you desperately want to ignore or deflect. But it is the solemn truth from the lips of the Son of God himself. And you need to hear this warning, and I need to give it to you, and you need to act on it. Jesus bluntly warns his listeners that this fire, this destruction, is one of only two possible destinations. And then he speaks of life. The other ultimate destination. And just as the experience of destruction will never end, so this life will never end. For this is eternal life with Jesus in a new recreated world. Jesus has spoken of his kingdom. This is what the Sermon on the Mount has been describing. And this new world is where the kingdom is finally going to be made perfect. Here's the description from the beginning of Revelation 22. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of the great street of the city. On each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree of the healing of the nations. No longer will there be any curse. The throne of God and of the Lamb will be in the city, and his servants will serve him. They will see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads. There will be no more night. They will not need the light of a lamp or the light of the sun, for the Lord God will give them light, and they will reign forever and ever. It is a breathtaking picture that rolls on and on. It's a picture of beauty and healing and light, the end of all evil, and above all, the unending presence of the Lord Jesus Christ with us. Two destinations. One filled with tears of bitter despair, and the other where the only tears are tears of joy. Two destinations. Now, thirdly, Jesus says there are only two roads. There are only two roads. And Jesus speaks of a broad road and a narrow road which lead to these two destinations. Picture it of every member, every single member of the human race walking along one of these two roads. And each road begins with a gate, a wide gate and a narrow gate. So the first road is broad, it's wide. There's plenty of room on this road. You can carry as much baggage with you as you like. There's no need to leave anything behind. Jesus gives the impression that walking along this road is rather easy. The surface is smooth and there are no steep hills to climb. And the broad road, he says, is very popular. It's well frequented, this road. You have only to follow the crowd to find it and to keep moving along it. Stay on the broad road and you'll have plenty of company, plenty of people just like you. Right, but there's plenty of room to spread out as well. So there's scope for differences of opinion, scope to express yourself. It's very nice, this road. The only real problem with it is that it leads inexorably to the destination Jesus has warned you about. As close as the next corner, perhaps, the sky will suddenly look darker. The threat of death will close in. And at that point, this road will have nothing at all to offer, except for the company of thousands of others who are in reality just as lost as you. But the narrow road is very different. It begins with a narrow gate. The word suggests it's hard to get through. In fact, it's even hard to find. Do you see that? If you look at the words, you can see the descriptions of the broad and narrow roads follow the same pattern, except at this point, Jesus doesn't say that few enter through the narrow gate. He says that few even manage to find it. The meaning of this is obvious. Entering the Christian life is not easy. It's a narrow gate. First, you need to be shown it so that you can see where it is, and then you need to squeeze through it. You can't just wander through this gate. It's like one of those full height turnstiles that you sometimes find at high security locations. We had them where I worked at a nuclear power station, and you certainly had to squeeze through. You can't get through those things carrying a rucksack and a big suitcase. In fact, if you want to get through, you have to leave stuff behind. On this road, you can't take it all with you. In particular, to enter through the narrow gates, you have to leave behind your pride, your selfish ambitions, your desire to be running your own life. What Jesus has been talking about all the way through the Sermon on the Mount must be true of you as you walk this road. You won't be putting your own rights first anymore. You won't be striking back at people who hurt you anymore. You won't be promoting your own reputation anymore. All that has to die. All that has to be left behind at the gate. There is a cost to beginning the Christian life. What's more, having begun with this narrow, constricted gateway, the road continues to be narrow. The picture this creates is more like a narrow mountain path which climbs steeply and it's rocky underfoot. It's a challenge to walk this road. It's not at all like the broad open spaces of the other road. This one is tough. And let's be absolutely honest about it. Just as Jesus is honest about it here, the Christian life is not the easy option. Do you want an easy path through life? Well, then stay on the broad road. Follow the crowds. Don't come in here. Don't come this way. Christianity is not some crutch that will prop you up and make your life more comfortable. And it does not get easier as we go on. It starts narrow and it continues narrow. And to pretend it is anything else is just deluding people, and we don't want to do that here this morning. We want to be real. In the words of the poem by Christina Rossetti, does the road wind uphill all the way? Yes, to the very end. Not only that, but the narrow road is not nearly as popular as the broad way. There are few who find it, says Jesus. Do you want to be popular? Then don't come this way. Many times Jesus speaks very strongly about the cost attached to going his way. He talks in terms of taking up your cross to follow him. In biblical times, you only did that if you were going to your own execution. That's what it meant. He urges people to count the cost very carefully before setting out to follow him. This is a narrow road. It's a tough road. So if you are a Christian and you are on this road and the cost is feeling very high right now, don't be surprised. Trials and difficulties are exactly what we should expect on this road. Jesus told us all about that. But look at where the road is leading. And look at the alternative. But of course, there is a wonderful aspect to this road as well. And as soon as we describe it, as we've just done in terms of following Jesus, we can see how wonderful it is. This is the great compensation. This is the great joy of the Christian life. Not only are we heading for the best possible destination, we're following in the footsteps of the Lord Jesus. As we walk this road, though it will not be easy, we're walking along behind Jesus. And as we do that, bit by bit, we're becoming like him. More and more like the people described in the Beatitudes and the rest of the Sermon on the Mount. More and more like Jesus. More and more merciful and peacemaking and longing for what is good and pure in our hearts. More and more getting rid of anger and lust and self and hypocrisy. Less and less trusting in the time-limited and decaying stuff we can accumulate in this world, which is rubbish, and more pursuing the treasure that lasts forever. The narrow road is steep, and sometimes it's especially painful, but it is so much better to be walking on this road. Again, if you're a Christian, when times are tough, just look back and see how far you have come. See how you have changed. See how he has changed you as he has led you. See what he's been doing in your life since the day he brought you through the narrow gates. Let me quickly deal with two possible misunderstandings we might have about what Jesus says here. One, does this mean that very few people are actually on the road to life? Jesus said many are entering on the broad road, but few find the narrow way. The answer is, we don't know, and it's not really the point Jesus is making in this passage. Another time he was directly asked this very question, are there going to be many or few? Here is what he says in Luke 13:22. Then Jesus went through the towns and villages, teaching as he made his way to Jerusalem. Someone asked him, Lord, are only a few people going to be saved? Same question. He said to them, make every effort to enter through the narrow door, because many, I tell you, will try to enter and will not be able to. Jesus doesn't answer the question, you see. Instead, he emphasizes what is really important. You make sure you are on the right road. And the point here is just the same. Don't count the numbers. You concentrate on where you are. Make sure you are on the right roads. And when we come to the great vision of heaven in Revelation, we do get the impression that there will be vast numbers around the throne of God. Revelation 7 verse 9. After this I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people and language, standing before the throne and in front of the Lamb. We have to leave the numbers to God and listen to what Jesus is saying to us here. And the second misunderstanding is this, and this is really important. You see, we might think about this picture of the two gates and imagine that we can hang about indefinitely, as long as we like, outside them, making up our minds, or perhaps never going through either of them. As if, in fact, there is a third option, which is to do nothing at all. A neutral option. Perhaps that's where some of you think you are. But that would be pushing Jesus' illustration too far. The problem for us is that in reality, we start life already embarked on the broad road. We are born at the wide gateway. We are sinners even at that point. Rebels against God even at that point. Or to go back to the picture we began with, we are already sitting in the burning building, breathing in the smoke. As long as we continue to reject Christ, we are simply confirming our decision to stay on the broad road. And we have to see this. There are only two roads. One leads to destruction, the other leads to life. And each of us now is on one road or the other. And this is where some of you are in terrible danger. You think you can wait and wait to make your decision. You've heard the message so many times, but still you think you can wait outside. The truth is, you're already on the broad road to destruction. It is time you woke up. You will not have the opportunity forever to choose the way of life. And it is time you woke up. And so we come fourthly to the last statement. Therefore, we must decide. Therefore, we must decide. In verse 13, Jesus gives us this very simple command. It couldn't be much simpler, could it? Enter through the narrow gates. At the beginning of the narrow way stands the narrow gate. If you've never done this, then a once-off decision is required. Go through the gate. You have to make the decision. There are two options, two destinations, two ways. You are already heading for one of the destinations now. You are already on one of the roads now. The narrow gate is hard to find, Jesus says. But by the grace of God, you have found it. You are here this morning, and at this moment, you are standing at the gate with the opportunity to go through. You have the chance now. You have been shown where the gate is. So how do we go through the narrow gate? What exactly does it mean? To enter through the narrow gate means that we take a decisive step. We recognize that we're offenders against God. We have not kept his laws. We have not lived the life that he has told us to live. We recognize where the broad road is leading us. So we decide to believe what Jesus says. Not just the gentle stuff, but the hard words as well. We say, yes, I know this is true. This is the diagnosis. We are outrageous sinners. We need to be put right with God. And that can only happen through the cross of Jesus Christ. The cross where he died to pay the penalty for our sin and rebellion. The cross of Christ is where we can be reconciled to God. It's the place, it's the only place where a lifetime of enmity and opposition gives way to a lifetime of peace. That's the invitation. That's the offer. So this is what we do. We recognize who we are and what we are like. We look at Jesus Christ and what he has done and what he is like and what he offers, and we ask God to forgive us. We ask him to wipe out that record of wrongs, that endless list of failures that we have built up. And because of Jesus, he will. That's what it means to enter through the narrow gates. Leaving behind our big ideas about ourselves. Leaving behind our pride and our self-love, because they won't fit through the gate. This is radical. This is unconditional. Instead of trusting in ourselves from here, we're trusting in Jesus Christ. We're not going our own way, which leads to death. We're going his way, which leads to life. It's pretty simple, really. He takes us through the narrow gate, and he will lead us all the way along the narrow road. All the way to the final destination. Not destruction, but life. Have you been through the narrow gate? And if you have not, are you ready to enter it now?